Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Getting a handle on illegal immigration and figuring out what to do with those who didn't go through official channels to live and work here has been a decades-long problem. Dealing with finding, arresting, and removing those who don't have legal status is the job of the federal government and ICE, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency. But they often rely on local law enforcement to help them in that effort. In the last several years, local sheriffs were asked to comply with the federal government's 287G program, which is designed to help ICE in those efforts. In 2019, Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden ended his office's participation in that program, and he wasn't alone. Most, if not all, Democratic sheriffs in the state joined him. But in December of last year, HB 10 was passed into law by the General Assembly over then-Governor Cooper's veto. The bill includes provisions for immigration enforcement and requires county sheriffs to cooperate with ICE. The passage of that bill was a topic addressed by House Speaker Destin Hall in his recent response to Governor Stein's State of the State address.
President Trump's immigration policies will have the full support of the North Carolina General Assembly. Just last year, the Republican General Assembly enacted legislation that requires law enforcement to cooperate with ICE to keep criminal illegal aliens off of our streets. But many Democratic officials in our state still want to keep pursuing the same failed open borders policies of the Biden administration. So just this week, we introduced new legislation to close loopholes exploited by those who would seek to turn North Carolina into a sanctuary state. If local sheriffs avoid cooperating with federal ICE officials, the citizens of this state will hold you accountable. And if you're an illegal alien committing crimes in our state, you gotta go. This is a common sense policy that the people of our state overwhelmingly agree with.
Sheriff McFadden was opposed to HB 10, but says he is now complying with ICE's detainer request, though ICE says he has not notified them prior to releasing suspects. The sheriff says that's because the law doesn't require it. It sounds like splitting hairs. It sounds complicated. It sounds like a war of wills. But a law is a law, and in previous conversations about this topic, the sheriff has said that complying with these requests would put him in violation of other laws. So, time for a deeper conversation about that and additional topics surrounding the sheriff's office. And so we welcome back Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden to the program. Thank you for being here.
Thank you, sir, for having me.
This is going to be a complicated, meticulous discussion, I hope, because I want to go through all a little nitty-gritty and make people understand your point of view and ICE's point of view and the legislature's point of view. So don't tune out. Don't go to sleep. This is going to be tough. One of your first official acts as sheriff years ago was to end your cooperation, as I said, with 287G, but both you and then CMPD Chief Kerr Putney believe that participation in the plan, in that program, made the community less safe because it made people less apt to come forward in case they witnessed a crime or had a crime committed upon them. And you were joined by six other urban area sheriffs in the state in that opinion and in not following 287G. At the time, you said that not cooperating would build trust in the community. Did that prove to be true?
Yes, it has. And thank you for having me. It has built trust, and you are exactly right. It did not help us by having 287G. People live in fear, just like they live in fear now. And so we believe removing that and instilling trust in the community was more important than having something like 287G that was not well thought out of.
So at the time, some said that you were, quote, literally releasing child rapists and sexual abusers back into the community by not honoring jail detainers sought by ICE. Now, to be clear, detainers are not warrants. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And you have said that ICE should have come to you with criminal warrants in order to hold them in jail. And you said at the time you were following state law by releasing these people without notifying ICE. Under HB 10, which just went into effect, Is that still the case? Would you still be breaking state law by notifying ICE of your intention to release these detainees?
It is not a law, and it's not in HB 10 for me to notify ICE. We notify ICE the day, the minute that these individuals are arrested. So ICE is using wordplay, or as some people say, word salad. What we do when someone is arrested in the Mecklenburg County Detention Center, we go through a process of asking them several questions about citizenship. When we determine that we cannot determine someone's citizenship, we at that point contact ICE. So that is what generates the detainer. So each time someone is arrested, we contact ICE with their citizenship or trying to determine their citizenship, and then they will send a detainer.
So I said a detainer is not the same thing as a criminal warrant. What is a detainer?
A detainer is a signed document. At the best, a ICE officer is requesting or asking us to hold this person for 48 hours. If you listen to them clearly, they will never say this: Sheriff McFadden is breaking the law, because I'm actually following the law. Once, and let me make sure that is the word game again. They said Sheriff McFadden is releasing these people from the detention center. Well, Sheriff McFadden receives an order by a judicial official ordering me to release this person from custody after they have met all the criterias of their release. So a judge is giving me a signed document ordering me to release this person because this person has fulfilled all the obligations.
So to be clear, because there's a lot of disinformation and a lot of misunderstanding exactly what's going on here. So a detainer, you receive a detainer from ICE, you are legally required to obey that detainer and keep that person in the jail for 48 hours, you do that, correct?
Well, here's what the detainer does. The detainer comes with an administrative warrant. When we have the detainer and administrative warrant that we do not honor, because they are not signed by a judge, my deputies take that detainer and that administrative order, take it before a state magistrate judge, and that state magistrate judge find probable cause that that person is the same person that I sent this paper over. Now, be careful with this, because that person is still not a federal inmate or a resident, as we call them, even when they are there for that 48 hours, because this has not been adjudicated or not have been reviewed by a federal judge.
So, but to be clear, when all the T's are crossed and the I's are dotted and the detainer comes to you that is official, you honor the detainer and you keep that person in the jail for 48 hours at ICE's request. Is that correct?
No. After the 48-hour order is given by a judge,
okay,
the detainer comes in with an administrative warrant not signed by a judicial official. Mm-hmm. I take those two items. My deputy takes those two items, present them to a state magistrate judge. Then the state magistrate judge says, detainer has his name on it. The administrative warrant has his name on it. Now I will issue an order for him to remain here for 48 hours.
Are there other judges in North Carolina who do it differently?
Every judge in North Carolina should do that.
I mean, excuse me. Are there other sheriffs in North Carolina who do it differently?
Not now. Everybody does. Everybody's followed. We are mandated.
Then why are you the lightning rod?
Because they like for me to be the lightning rod. They like for me to be the lightning rod. We hold more than anybody else.
I asked you this question the last time you were on this program, which was a long time ago, and we were talking about this topic then. It was probably the 287G topic, but it's close to this one. And I asked you, why don't you just make a phone call to ICE once these people are in your jail and you're honoring the 48-hour detainer request? And it's time to let them go because the 48 hours is up. Why don't you just make a phone call and say, in 10 minutes or an hour and a half, I'm going to release this person? Why not just call them?
Because then someone said that I'm not following the law. The law does not require me to do that. Now, when Dustin Hall and Danny Britt and all of those finish with this in December, mm-hmm, and require me to do that, then I will follow that law. The issue is that we are following the law to the T. Now, when we get outside of the law, then you can say, well, he's not following the law.
But we're going to get to this later in the program. You're asking ICE to be more cooperative with you. You would like them to let you know when they're about to conduct an operation so you can get the jail ready for the people they round up, I suppose. So why not extend the courtesy to them to make the phone call? I'm going to release this prisoner in 2 hours.
Well,
why
I think that they have that already. I give them 48 hours.
Okay. People come into this country illegally. They slip over the border or they overstay their visa. Many different ways they're here that they haven't gone through channels, and therefore they are breaking the law. As a law enforcement officer, why don't you feel compelled, aren't you compelled, to cooperate completely with ICE and to do whatever it takes to see the ICE mission through to completion?
Well, I will. But you have to understand, I am protecting the citizens of my city, and I'm protecting my county from lawsuits. These things, they are breaking the law, and ICE has the ability, if they choose to charge them with breaking the law. They have two federal complaints or laws that they could utilize if they wish to, but they choose not to. So they put us into a difficult situation where we could be sued, just like some of the other counterpartners of mine across the country being sued by ACLU. So if they are breaking the law, which they do, charge them with a criminal offense instead of a civil offense.
Sheriff Gary McFadden, Mecklenburg County Sheriff, is our guest today on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. What is the new HB 10 law, which went into effect, I think,
December 1st.
What does it require you to do that you were not required to do prior to its going into effect?
Holding a individual who that ICE has sent a detainer and an administrative warrant on, we hold them for an additional 48 hours. So when a person is arrested, say by CMPD, Mint Hill, Matthews, Pineville, they bring them in on an assault charge. We find out that they are an undocumented immigrant that we can't determine their citizenship. At that time, I send a message to ICE. ICE will tell me that this person is undocumented. They'll send a detainer and they'll send an administrative warrant over. Again, not signed by a judge. We take those two documents and take them before a state magistrate judge.
Why don't they do it? Why don't they bring you a
report? Well, that's the question that we have asking everybody.
And is this a problem just in North Carolina, or is this how they're doing it in every state in the country?
Well, this is how they're doing it in North Carolina. I can tell you this is kind of unique. HB 10 is kind of unique, but what they're doing is creating bills all over the United States. So after we get these two documents, we take them before a state judge. A state judge, not a federal judge. Mm-hmm. So the two documents are signed by an ICE officer, not vetted out by a judge, not reviewed by any judicial official. They just sent them over to us. My deputy, who then takes those two documents and that person, present them in front of a judge for probable cause, and the judge says, with these two documents, I believe that is the person. So we are going to hold them in an additional 48 hours at the cost of the Mecklenburg County citizens at $199 a day.
And I have 45 seconds left, but what was the impetus for HB 10, this new law? Why did they decide that they needed it?
Because out of North Carolina General Statute 162.62 that mandates every sheriff in North Carolina to follow, the lawmakers in Raleigh did not like the last paragraph. That last paragraph says, nothing in this section will construct to deny bond to a prisoner or prevent a prisoner from being released from confinement when that prisoner otherwise is eligible for release.
I think I don't understand that, but we'll come back and get to the bottom of that in a second. We have to take a break. Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, our guest. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte. Using Mazda's customer-centric approach to cars to create a car buying and servicing experience where the customer is the center of their business. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Our guest today is Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, who has been in the center of the ICE controversy now for years, 5 or 6 years, since 2019 when he first came into office and decided that his office and several others around the state would not enforce the 287G program. Now HB 10 has been passed, which adds more rules and regulations that sheriffs must comply with, and you are complying with HB 10. But what I asked you in a part of the program that some people did not hear, what HB 10 does that wasn't in place before, and you read a paragraph. Read it again, if you would, please.
So the paragraph, before HB 10, we had North Carolina General Statute 162.62 that mandates each and every sheriff, all 100 sheriffs in North Carolina, to cooperate with ICE. So here's what North Carolina General Statute 162.62 means. It has three parts. A, determine the legal residency of that arrestee, which we do by asking them the three questions. Mm-hmm. B says notify ICE, which we do. We have that documented. We notify ICE when we cannot determine the citizenship of that individual. C is what generated HB 10. C is what the lawmakers in North Carolina didn't like. C says this: nothing in this section shall construct or deny the bond to a person to prevent a prisoner from being released from confinement after they meet all the conditions of their release. So when a person...
What does that mean?
When a person, when you check all the boxes to be released, you paid the bond, you answered all the questions, or the judge determines that you do not have to stay here, I'm going to sign you out a release order. Nothing should deny a person from doing that.
So putting that in simple English, and this is something we've read about in the paper and heard about on the radio and watched reports on television, people come into your jail, they are not here legally, you have notified ICE, you have held them for 48 hours at ICE's request, the 48 hours is coming up, you don't necessarily by law have to tell ICE that you're releasing them, but you've held them for 48 hours, which is what they've asked you to do, and suddenly these people either get out of jail because you cannot hold them legally any longer, or they post bond, and the bond is accepted, and they have to be released. Is that correct?
Correct to a point. Even when they post bond,
okay,
we still have to hold them for the 48 hours.
Yes.
But after that 48 hours, Monday at 9 o'clock a.m., that person is arrested.
So why
Wednesday.
So why this controversy? Why is everybody pointing fingers?
Because it makes it newsworthy, and it brings pressure to us. And this is why ICE is doing it, and it makes the pressure that we're seeing now. Everybody's confused. Nobody understands it. And so it caused a lot of controversial issues in the community.
So last September, when this law was still being debated in the House, now House Speaker Destin Hall spoke about what he perceived as support from the state's sheriffs for this bill.
In my opinion, many of those sheriffs who are not cooperating, I think they want us to pass this because many of them are career law enforcement and they know it makes no sense at all to do what they're doing.
So you were not among the sheriffs, as I understand it, of whom he is speaking. You were not in support of this bill. Why?
Because it shows that we are not doing what the law tells us to do. The law clearly states that we cannot hold a person after they meet all the criteria for release. This is when it becomes a legal issue and you are opening yourself up for lawsuits. And here's why this is so important. When the lawsuits comes, ICE is nowhere to be found. ICE has no obligation to these lawsuits because these people who are being held are still not federal inmates or federal prisoners.
This is what's so difficult to understand. There is an effort on the part of the federal government to get people out of the country who are not here legally.
Yes.
You know and have spoken with Tom Holman, who is the deportation czar, for lack of a better term, and who has said he will do as much as even thwarting a court order to get people out. He's going to do it no matter what, come hell or high water. So they're bound and determined to do this. They have this program where they give you a detainer, which you honor and other sheriffs honor, for 48 hours, but then the 48 hours is up, and they don't pick these people up.
163 as of last Monday.
Why not? Why don't they pick them up?
They don't have the ability to pick them up. And here's some of the ability. First of all, resources and money. But
we just sent three plane loads of people to Venezuela or to El Salvador. What do you mean they don't have the ability to pick them up?
Well, legally. If you can ask ICE, why? Well, that's a good question. Let me back this up. Then we should ask ICE, why haven't they picked up the 163 people that were left and bonded out of the Mecklenburg County Detention Center. They will not give us an answer on why they won't pick them up. I have emailed them. I have expressed my concern that we are holding these people at the cost of $199 a day, $398 per stay. As of last Monday, $68,000 of the taxpayers' money.
So do we not get reimbursed by the federal government for these, for holding these people?
Absolutely not.
Why not?
That's a good question.
And this is true around the country?
Well, it's true for Mecklenburg County. I don't know about whatever they're doing around the country, but I can tell you.
You don't know?
No, I mean, I don't think that they are reimbursing them. Well, let me say this. In the conversation that we have had with ICE officials, I can hear other sheriffs around the country doing our national convention asking for federal assistance and resources. Pretty much, I don't believe that the government is funding these initiatives.
65, you had 163 undocumented people that...
Last Monday,
that ICE has failed to pick up, and it cost you $68,000. Why does it cost so much money?
$199 a day to live at the Mecklenburg County Detention Center. Food, three meals a day, washing, electricity, heat, clothing, cost of my deputies moving people around inside the detention center, just like anybody... Marriott?
I got to tell you that if I didn't go to Costco, I don't think I'd spend $193 a day.
No, I don't think so either.
All right. Evidently, this failure to pick up detainees is not unusual. Orange County Sheriff Charles Blackwood told a radio station last month that over 3 years, he's received about 17 detainers, considerably fewer than you. ICE picked up zero. Why? I mean,
well, here's what,
was it different under the Biden administration? Is it more zealous under the Trump administration?
No.
Or is it the same?
It's the same. It's transferring an individual from state custody to federal custody. It is something called a writ. So when you want somebody to be transferred from state custody to federal custody, you have to have a reason. You just can't transfer them over. Federal warrant. Federal indictment, federal complaint, accompanied by a writ. That writ says, I need this individual in this county to be heard for this hearing.
And that is not the responsibility of a local sheriff.
It is if it is a writ. If another sheriff says, I want this, Cleveland County says, we have this person charged with assault on a female. You have him in charge with assault on a female. A writ will get this person from Charlotte to Cleveland County. He will stand to hear that hearing in Cleveland County, and then he will be, as we call it, writ back to Mecklenburg County to stand these charges.
But I'm talking about transferring these people from your custody to federal custody.
They need a writ.
And that's not your responsibility. That's the federal government's responsibility.
That is correct. And if you ask the federal government, will they send us a writ, or will they send a federal complaint, federal warrant, or an indictment? This is when it becomes wordplay. Well, we are just asking him to, when he's finished with them, we will be at the back door, and when they come out of the back door of the Mecklenburg County Detention Center, then we will apprehend him. This is what they really want us to do. So legally, what jurisdiction do have to take this person in custody from our state custody? So it's easier for them to do as they have been doing on the streets for the last couple of years. And if you look at this documentary, Immigration Nation, on Netflix, it will clearly show you what they're doing and how they operate.
I want to talk about two very specific cases, one of which made the news because of our colleague Joe Bruno on Channel 9. But let's talk about this case of Joe Napoleon Serrano. You have said that you want to take violent criminals off our streets, whether they are undocumented immigrants or American citizens, you want them off the streets. And you've also said that we need, quote, comprehensive immigration reform because the current system is not working. And I don't think that you would get any argument from just about anybody in the country about that. And we've been talking about that for years now. But this is an example of that. Joe Napoleon Serrano, he's a Honduran national. an individual who has been entering the country illegally and being expelled several times since 2010. This past January, he found himself in your custody charged with domestic violence. Your department determined that he was not a citizen. Your department notified ICE of his arrest. The next day, your office received the paperwork from ICE, signed by a magistrate to hold Joe Napoleon Serrano for 48 hours.
Plus.
And you did. You complied with that. But the window expired. ICE did not take possession of him, and he posted $5,000 bond and was released.
That is correct.
Under the law, you had to let him go.
Absolutely. After the 48 hours, this gentleman stayed an additional 2 to 3 days after the 48 hours.
Why?
Because he wanted his family was attempting to post his bond at the time to get the money, I guess, because he stayed
if his family had not posted bond, would he have stayed in jail?
He probably would have stayed in jail for a couple of more days, and then he would go to a bond hearing, which we are not in control of, and heard by a judge. Assault and the domestic violence are common crimes that happen each and every day here in Mecklenburg County. After they go to court, a judge listens to them, and then they decide whether that person should remain in the Mecklenburg County Detention Center or be released. People with these charges are released each and every day in Mecklenburg County.
Which is why you have said, at least once in the press, you don't know why that we're making a big deal out of this, because it happens every day thousands of times.
It does.
Under the current administration and their very vocal intention of rounding up all the undocumented immigrants in our country and getting them out of the country, how do you explain this lack of response?
Well, I don't know. Serrano is a perfect case. Serrano was arrested in 2010. ICE, if you look at it closely, ICE allowed him to stay in the country in 2010. He came back in 2011. He was deported. He came back. In 2020, he was arrested again. Now, here's where it gets complicated. When he was arrested in 2020, he was charged with reentry after deportation, which is what they should have that correctly charged. That is a criminal charge. Reentry after deportation. They actually charged him with that in 2020. He was given 120 days probation. That means he didn't spend criminal time in jail. After the 120 days and on the probation part of the Western District of Probation in the United States, which means on Trade Street, the federal courthouse, he was given probation for 120 days. After he finished probation of the 120 days, it is my assumption that after he finished that 120 days, he was allowed to remain in Mecklenburg County.
So this is 2020. Is that under the Biden administration?
It should have been.
So was that simply a more lax approach by the Biden administration?
No, I think it's the approach that is now. It's under any administration. You arrest a person, he gets to be here on probation, and he stays.
We just sent 3 plane loads of people without due process to El Salvador, some of whom are likely innocent people who are caught up in this roundup. We don't know what their disposition is. Their lawyers can't talk to them. Their families can't talk to them. They're in some jail somewhere in El Salvador. And yet we have this individual that we're just talking about here who has been who entered the country several times and deported several times and is now back in the country illegally and it's a federal crime to come back into the country after you have been deported, and yet they don't pick him up. What's up with that?
This is something we have to ask ICE about. And that's the issue. So when this person is back in the country for 120 days serving probation, he is in Mecklenburg County from all that I investigated. After he finishes probation, if this is a violent person and he has clearly demonstrated that to some point, he is still allowed to remain here in Mecklenburg County because we have no indication that he was deported. 2020, arrested, 120 days, he's here in Mecklenburg County. Probation, he's here in Mecklenburg County. probation expires, he's served his 120 days, there is no indication that he was deported. So he was allowed to remain here. After remaining here, he caused the assault. He's arrested. He meets all the criteria. Now, you have to understand, when he's arrested for this assault, what happens? Another detainer and another administrative warrant and another 48-hour hold. In 2025, he goes through the same process again under this administration. What happens? Now he's deported. Maybe he's deported. But let me think. He's deported. What is that going to cost the citizens of Mecklenburg County now? Because if he doesn't show up for court, it's an order for arrest, and he starts all over again.
Sheriff Gary McFadden, our guest from Mecklenburg County on Charlotte Talks on WFAE. So let's back up again before you get off this Serrano case.
Yes, sir.
He was arrested January the 12th by CMPD for assault on a female and for domestic violence assault. The ICE detainer was placed on him that same day. It expired on January the 14th. He made cash bond on January the 17th and was released. You say he was then taken into custody by ICE days later, but it's unknown if he has appeared in court or if the DA dropped the charges, but that no order for his arrest was pending as of last Friday. Does this seem normal to you, or is something out of the ordinary here?
No, this is what happens to individuals in ICE custody. So you have to understand, if this person does not show up for court, for an order for arrest will be issued or the district attorney will dismiss the charges. That causes two problems. If the district attorney dismissed the charges on Mr. Serrano, we have sent a message to the victims of domestic violence. We don't care. We don't care about the charges because we cared about deportation. So if this Serrano is, the charges are dismissed, we have sent a message to domestic violence victims and the victim, alleged victim of his crime, number one. Number two, if he does not show up for court, the district attorney could issue an order for his arrest. So if he comes back to Charlotte or is in Columbia, South Carolina, and gets arrested, he will be brought back to Mecklenburg County again and start this whole immigration process again with a detainer and an administrative warrant. Yeah.
It's mind-blowing. Sheriff Gary McFadden from Mecklenburg County, our guest. We have another case I want to talk about, that of Eric Antonio Lopez Hernandez, and then we'll talk about some other aspects of what's going on with you and ICE and others in a moment at Charlotte Talks. Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, incorporating Mazda's customer-centric vehicle design by making the customer the center of business to create a better car buying experience. More at MazdaofSouthCharlotte.com. It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFAE.org. Our guest today, Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden. We're talking about his department's interface with ICE and some of the things that you perhaps have been hearing about in the news and accusations flying here, hither, thither, and yon. And we just spoke about this Joe Napoleon Serrano, who's been deported several times from the United States, most recently in the custody of the sheriff, but let go because he posted bond, which
you have to do,
and ICE never really made any attempt to pick him up. And I'm just curious about something, and I'm trying to get to the bottom of this. I mean, I don't care which side of the political aisle you're on, you can agree or disagree with the approach being taken today by the Trump administration on getting people who shouldn't be here out of the country. That aside, they're doing it. They're rounding up people all over the country, and they just put them on airplanes and send them out. Every inmate that you have in your jail, whether they're an American citizen or they are somebody here illegally, was arrested by CMPD. You inform ICE, I got this guy. He's not supposed to be here. Come get him. They ask you to hold him for 48 hours. You do. They don't come get him. How do you explain that? They could come get him, put him on an airplane.
But they do not have the legal authority, a writ, federal complaint, federal warrant, an indictment.
Do they, for the people they're rounding up?
You have to ask ICE that.
Okay.
I don't think they do. They have a detainer. And see, that's why it's so important to understand this. When you have a person like these people that we're talking about, that you believe that is violent, why not use the two federal laws complaint? Illegal entry, which is a misdemeanor, illegal entry after deportation, which is a felony, which they did in Mr. Serrano's case.
Right.
But then they allowed him still to stay here in Mecklenburg County.
So you also, over the weekend, brought our attention to the case of Eric Antonio Lopez Hernandez, who you say is clearly a violent person, but that ICE never placed a warrant on him while he was at the detention center. He was first arrested in El Paso in 2018 and deported, but he wasn't deported until 2023. He was arrested again in February 2025 by CMPD on outstanding warrants after having been in the hospital for being shot by CMPD in the course of an altercation. He was charged with attempted first-degree murder. ICE was informed of his arrest, but they issued no detainer. There was a back and forth between your office and ICE over several months in which they asked to be informed prior to his release, but still issued no detainer. He had a court date on March 13th, but no detainer was filed at that time and no federal warrant or indictment was handed down. So what is his status today?
He is still at the Mecklenburg County Detention Center, awaiting on the state charges at this time. No detainer, no 48-hour hold, no federal complaint, no federal warrant, no federal indictment, and no writ to bring him before the federal government on any federal charges.
And you have suggested to ICE in this case that it would be best if they sought a federal complaint about Mr. Hernandez on charges of reentering the country following deportation, which, as you say, is a federal crime. It's a felony. And since you know about him, why then is a detainer necessary? He allegedly committed a federal crime. Why don't you just hold him until charges are brought?
Well, we are holding him. We are still okay. Holding him. It's just the issue is here's why it's so important, why we need a new Immigration Comprehensive Reform Act, because none of this is working. None of this is working. The people they have on these planes, they're going to come back, whether you believe it or not. They're going to come back. But here's why this is so important when we look at it. If we look at Mr. Hernandez, when he was arrested in 2018, they did not deport him. They simply told him to agree. He supposedly illegally came into the United States, and they said, well, can you agree to come to a removal hearing? 2018. He did not come to the removal hearing, but he was rearrested in 2023. At that time, then they deported him for the 2018 arrest and also for the 2023 arrest, and they deported him for failure to attend a deportation hearing and coming inside the United States. When they arrested him again on 2025 for the shooting at law enforcement officers here in Mecklenburg County, clearly that is a violent person. He's shooting at the police. Why not now charge him with reentry after deportation and any other federal charges?
Tom Holman is the man who is in charge, that Donald Trump put in charge of taking care of getting people out of the country. He was involved in that as well in the first Trump administration, and he seems to be, from what I've seen on television, a pretty tough cookie who is determined to do precisely what he set out to do, come hell or high water.
Correct.
You know Tom Holman.
Yes.
Have you discussed this? Have you talked about this need for comprehensive immigration reform? And if so, does he agree with you? Does he have ideas of his own on what it might look like?
As I told him, cooperation, collaboration, and communication is important. And cooperation works both sides. He said it works both sides. He is totally unaware of House Bill 10 that's happening in North Carolina. When I had the conversation with him, he was not aware of. He's interested in this because it shows that at least it is a better method of holding people and for 48 hours. And he said he would come and visit, but that hasn't happened yet. Mm-hmm. But I believe that he will come and visit. I believe that we will have these conversations. What we're looking for is a more comprehensive immigration reform bill or act. But everybody who's involved has to be at the table. If we're not involved at the table in Raleigh, they can bring any HB, whatever they want, But when you find a misstep, like a 48-hour hold or a misstep, we can hold them. But are you going to bring an indictment, federal warrant, federal complaint, accompanied by a writ from state to federal custody?
Last week, ICE arrested 24 people in this county, something that you praised them for. You issued a statement saying, quote, "I wouldn't expect anything less from ICE and these federal task forces. I commend ICE, the FBI, the U.S. Marshals Service, and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives for working together to remove violent criminals from our streets. However, when operations like these take place in Mecklenburg County, as a courtesy, we expect to be notified to prevent potential blue-on-blue violent assaults." That's what you said. Explain that.
Well, when you operate, at least give me the courtesy to say that you are here doing an operation. We don't need to know all about the operation, but if you're on the north side of the county doing an operation and you get into a confrontation with individuals, you would want a response to that. We all saw that response on April 29th. If you're there doing an operation, at least let us know.
But now these operations, one presumes, are planned in secret to ensure their success, and a lot of that depends on surprise, and the more people who know something, the more possibility for that surprise to be spoiled. Would they be compromising that security if local law enforcement is read in on the operation prior to it occurring?
No. No.
How do you know that?
Well, how do we know that it will if you don't try? And all we're saying is if they believe that this works for them and they believe that it is safe for them, we'll continue to operate that. But then when you need help, then you expect us to run into a fire that we don't know anything about. But again, these operations will still need our assistance. If they're making those arrests, where would they take them? They would take them to the Mecklenburg County Detention Center. But here's what I'm going to ask. This sounds great, making the 24 arrests. Absolutely great. And I applaud them, but they're not doing anything out of the ordinary, what they shouldn't be doing. Here's what we need to follow. How many of these 24 will be charged with federal crimes? That is what we need to look at. 24 arrests. Yeah, DUIs, assault, and all this stuff. But how many are being charged with federal crimes? It looks good. It sounds good. But this is 24 that we do every day across America. Are they being charged with federal crimes? Will they be indicted for federal crimes? Will we see a federal complaint on those federal crimes? And if they are still inside my detention center, will they send me a writ to appear before a federal judge? That is the most interesting part. Just don't let the 24 make it sound like they're doing a great job, which they are.
And in that statement, the part of which I just read, I think, you made a point of saying that, quote, "By now, ICE should be aware we do not honor civil detainers because they are not signed by a judge." And you've brought this up several times in this conversation. "I must follow the law," you said. "If a judge orders me to release someone, I cannot legally detain them." So clear that up. Are you releasing people after 48 hours because judges are telling you to on a case-by-case basis or because it's written into the law? Or
Every individual, I will say this. If you bring me a name, I will show you a release order and the conditions of a release for each and every person who is arrested at the Mecklenburg County Detention Center and detained. Each person is given their own criteria of release. So it's just not something that we're just blanketing and doing. Every person has a release order and a court date leaving the Mecklenburg County Detention Center. And here, what we need to understand clearly again, the sheriff is only releasing these people after a judicial official, a judge or a magistrate, has presented me with a signed document called a release order. So you have to understand, do I listen to the officer whose signature or just a blanket signature on a detainer, or do I listen to a judge who is ordering me judicially to release a person under a state mandate, which is HB 10 and the 48-hour hold?
The statement that you issued was, I think, 11-point type. It was a full page. So
nice.
You were very specific. You concluded that statement with this, quote, what I continue to expect and have said repeatedly is collaboration, communication, and open dialogue with ICE. A more comprehensive approach to immigration is necessary, and local sheriffs must be a part of that conversation. I cannot keep having these discussions through media releases, sound bites, and weekly statements. I hear your frustration there, but you are...
disappointed.
Well, yeah, but you're the sheriff of one in 100 counties in North Carolina and one of about 3,143 counties or county... equivalents in the nation, because some are parishes. Are you a lone voice in the wilderness singing into the wind on this? How many others feel the same way that you do and talk as openly about it as you have been talking?
I think that some of them are in fear because of retaliation, and it is a hard fight to stand. You know, I don't have a problem with it. I took an oath, and I must stand what's right. But simply, there are a lot of sheriffs who are going through this. Some are vocal. I don't think they're as vocal as I am, but some are vocal. Some have no idea what to do because they are confused.
So after the war on words on this HB 10 that you have conducted, Speaker Dustin Hall heard you. He said in January that changes to the law are possible after this conversation. He submitted House Bill 318 on March the 6th, which would require sheriffs to notify federal immigration authorities before releasing anyone being held at those officials' request. And that bill will be up for consideration tomorrow.
Correct.
In the House Judiciary Committee. Should it eventually pass, how would that sit with you? How would that change?
Still, I will follow the law. Let me say that. I will follow the law. I will call ICE with a 2-hour notice. Now, will they have the ability still to bring a federal warrant, a federal complaint, an indictment accompanied by a federal writ to have these people brought before a federal magistrate or judge? That won't happen. If it would happen, we have 163 people that they can show me the example of. So simply making it give me 2 hours notice, we can do that. We're going to do the same thing that we have been doing with HB 10, following the law. So I will give them the 2-hour notice. But 2 hours and 30 seconds after that, that person could be well out of their door.
Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, our guest on WFAE Charlotte Talks. I may have asked you this question earlier, but I'm going to ask it again because I don't remember the answer, to be honest with you.
Sure, we could.
How do other sheriffs in North Carolina feel about this? Are they as vocal as you? Are they as combative as you? Are they as much of a stickler and follower of the law as you appear to be, right down to the dotted I's and crossed T's? Or are they just doing what they should do because they like ICE?
I think it's a lot of the it's divided in North Carolina. The Democratic sheriffs and the Republican sheriffs are divided.
Mm-hmm.
I think that some of the Democratic sheriffs are vocal, but they're
tired.
But you
told me before this conversation started on the air that sheriffs don't care about Republicans or Democrats. They care about the law.
Sheriffs in other states, let me say that. That is a sad thing to say. We still fight here in North Carolina. I have a better relationship with a lot of sheriffs across the country, mm-hmm. In other states who have a border issue.
Okay.
I would go and visit them. They have a border issue and they will listen. In North Carolina, it's kind of different. Why? Because they have to listen to the guys in Raleigh and they have to cater to them in Raleigh. I think that we have an issue and we clearly see that this issue is immigration. This is why I'm asking to bring everybody to the table, whether you're Democrat, Republican, you like it or not, because they can change this law down to 1 hour. But, and we still won't have what we need.
But is your disagreement with these laws that you have to comply with and do comply with, but you're doing it as a stickler? This is what the law says. This is precisely what I'm going to do. Is that because of a political point of view, or is it simply because this is what the law says, I'm going to follow the law?
This is the law. This is the law, and I'm going to follow the law so to prevent from being sued by any organization, including the ACLU. This is the law. I'm going to follow the law.
Okay. Mecklenburg County Sheriff Gary McFadden, I hope we cleared up some of this. It's incredibly complicated, and
we'll be back if we don't.
Okay. I wish you well, and I thank you for the hour.
Charlotte Talks is a production of 90.7 WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from Mazda of South Charlotte. Our executive producer is Gabe Altieri. The senior producer is Sarah D'Elia. Our producer is Chris Jones. We have additional production help from Jesse Steinmetz. For more information on Charlotte Talks, to listen to past episodes, or to subscribe to the Charlotte Talks podcast, visit wfae.org/charlottetalks. Additional support for WFAE programming comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, a private corporation funded by the American people.
Support comes from WFAE members and Mazda of South Charlotte, focused on applying Mazda's customer-centric approach for vehicle design to car buying and servicing in order to create an experience centered around the customer. More at mazdaofsouthcharlotte.com.